It is Saturday night, February 21st, 2026. And if you are anywhere on the East Coast right now, specifically anywhere along that I-95 corridor, you can absolutely feel it.
Oh yeah. You step outside and the air just feels heavy.
Right. There's this very specific kind of tension. I mean, the grocery store shelves are getting completely bare. The salt trucks are already staging in these massive convoys on the side of the highway. And literally everyone is checking their weather apps every 5 minutes.
That's right. Because we are watching a massive system that is currently churning off the coast of the Carolinas, and it is honestly poised to make history.
Yeah.
This isn't just a regular winter storm. This is an atmospheric event that meteorologists are going to be talking about for a very, very long time. The sheer energy involved here is staggering.
Welcome to Meteorology Matters, the podcast that dives deep into the science, chaos, and stories behind the weather that shapes our world.
It is great to be here as we track this beast.
This show was created by meteorologist Rob Jones,
Who has basically not slept in 3 days, tracking this system relentlessly.
Now, let's get into today's episode of Meteorology Matters. But before we really dive into the snowdrifts and the actual physics of what is happening outside your window right now, we have just a little bit of housekeeping because this situation is evolving so fast.
It really is. The situation on the ground is changing hourly at this point.
Exactly. So if you want the absolute latest minute-by-minute updates, you need to be following the creator of this show, meteorologist Rob Jones.
Absolutely. You can find him on Instagram effectively just by searching the word meteorologist. And on TikTok, the handle is TV meteorologist.
Right. And for the video content, and trust me, with a storm of this magnitude, you are going to want to see the visuals, you want to see the model runs. Go to YouTube and follow Rob Jones Hurricane. You can actually find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist right there as well.
And please, if you find this information useful, and considering what is coming tonight and tomorrow, it might actually keep you safe, or at least keep you sane. Please like, follow, comment, and rate the podcast. It really helps us get this critical information out to more people who need it.
Okay, housekeeping is done. Let's look at the map. We have a monster nor'easter. It is basically blasting the mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, starting Sunday and rolling right into Monday. But the thing that really stopped me in my tracks today, the thing that screams, this is different.
The headline.
Yeah, the headline coming out of New York City.
It is a statistic that really puts this entire event into perspective. New York City is under a blizzard warning for the first time since 2017.
2017. I mean, that is 9 years ago. That is nearly a decade.
Think about that for a second. We have nearly a decade of people living in the city, people who maybe moved there for college or work, who have arguably never seen a true blizzard warning in Manhattan.
Right.
We aren't just talking about a winter storm watch, or an advisory, or a generic snow event. A blizzard warning is a very specific, very severe criteria from NOAA.
Let's break that down, actually, because people throw the word blizzard around a lot.
They do, yeah. But to get the official warning, it implies sustained winds or frequent gusts of 35 miles per hour or greater, and considerable falling or blowing snow that reduces visibility to less than a quarter of a mile.
Wow.
And the kicker is, that has to last for 3 hours or more consecutively.
So this isn't just, oh, look, it's going to snow a lot today. This is you will physically not be able to see your hand in front of your face.
Precisely. It is a sensory deprivation event. And the scope of these warnings is just massive. We're looking at blizzard warnings covering nearly 30 million people right now.
30 million?
Yeah, that is a staggering number of people directly in the path of the most severe criteria.
I mean, 30 million, that is the population of entire countries. That is an absolute logistical nightmare waiting to happen for emergency services, for the EPA dealing with municipal water runoffs later, for everything.
It stretches all the way from coastal New Jersey right up through the New York City metro area, covering all of Long Island and pushing straight up into coastal Connecticut and Massachusetts.
See, I-95 corridors, literal nightmare
It
scenario.
is the heart of the megalopolis completely shutting down.
So let's talk totals, because at the end of the day, that is what everyone wants to know, right? How much are we actually shoveling? How much of this concrete are we moving off our driveways?
Get your back braces ready. Seriously.
Yeah.
The general forecast across this entire swath is a widespread 12 to 18 inches.
Okay.
That is the baseline. That is what you should plan for at an absolute minimum if you are in those warning areas. But, and there's always, but with these highly dynamic atmospheric systems, there is significant boom potential.
Boom potential. I actually really like that term, even if I really don't like the implications for my lower back tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Boom potential refers to mesoscale banding. Basically, it means that where those heavy snow bands set up and stall, and they will absolutely stall because the atmospheric dynamics here are so incredibly strong, we could see localized totals pushing up to 24 inches.
2 solid feet of snow.
2 feet.
I saw that the forecast specifically for Central Park is calling for 18 inches as the baseline, but they aren't ruling out that 2-foot mark at all.
That is correct. And if we hit that, we are flirting with real record-breaking territory for the city. The NOAA office in Upton, New York is being very, very clear about this potential in their forecast discussions. This isn't media hype. The computer models are just locking in.
They are seeing all that moisture.
Right. They're seeing the moisture availability, the intense lift in the atmosphere, and the math just adds up to huge totals. You can't argue with the physics of it.
And what about the timing? Because I know a lot of people try to, you know, outsmart the storm. They think, oh, I'll just drive early Sunday morning and beat it, or I'll wait until Monday afternoon when it slows down.
Yeah, do not try to outsmart this one. I can't stress that enough. The atmosphere always wins that game.
Always.
The precipitation starts as a rain and snow mix down in D.C. on Sunday morning. But the main event, the rapid intensification of this system, happens Sunday night into Monday morning.
Literally the worst possible time frame for a Monday commute.
Exactly. We are expecting snowfall rates of 1 to 2 inches per hour during that overnight period.
And I actually read in some of the deeper technical discussions that in the heaviest of those mesoscale bands, we could see 3 inches per hour. Is that
3 inches per hour is incredible. Yes, that is on the table. Think about what that means practically. You can go out and shovel your front walk, turn around, go inside for a quick cup of coffee, and by the time you look out the kitchen window, it is completely covered again.
Yeah, it's just demoralizing.
Road crews simply cannot keep up with 3 inches per hour. It is physically impossible with the equipment they have. You plow a lane on the highway, drive 10 miles down the road, turn around to come back, and the lane you literally just plowed is already gone under a fresh layer.
So we have the main headline. A historic blizzard warning ending a 9-year drought of major snow events for New York City. But let's dig into why. Why this specific storm? Why now? Because I keep hearing this term thrown around on social media and everywhere else. Bomb cyclone.
Yes. It is a term that sounds like it was invented by a Hollywood movie producer to sell tickets to a disaster flick. But it's actually a very legitimate meteorological term.
So let's unpack the anatomy of this nor'easter. Where exactly is it coming from and how does it get so strong?
It is a very classic setup. The storm is developing off the coast of the Carolinas overnight tonight. And it is gathering its strength from the massive temperature contrast between the warm Gulf Stream waters and the bitter cold continental air sitting over the land.
Some of that moisture probably originally tracing back down to the Gulf of Mexico before it crossed over.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It taps into that southern moisture, crosses the southeast, and then hits the Atlantic. It is going to move north, hugging the coast. Now, usually these storms might drift too far out to sea, or they might hug the land way too close and just bring a bunch of rain to the I-95 corridor.
Right, the classic rain-snow line battle.
Exactly. But this one is threading a very, very dangerous needle right up the coast.
And that leads to the bomb cyclone part of the equation.
Right. The technical term for what is happening is bombogenesis. For a storm to officially qualify as a bomb cyclone, the barometric pressure within the center of the low has to drop 24 millibars in 24 hours.
Okay, 24 and 24. That is the golden rule.
That is the rule. But this storm, it is predicted to drop 24 millibars in less than 12 hours.
Wow. So it is massively overachieving.
It is rapidly intensifying at an alarming rate. Think of the atmosphere like a giant vacuum cleaner. When that pressure drops that incredibly fast, it creates a massive vacuum at the surface. It literally sucks in air from all directions to fill that void.
And that rushing air is the wind.
That rushing air is exactly what generates those hurricane force wind gusts we are going to see. And that vertical motion of the air rising so violently to fill the low pressure, that is what wrings out the atmospheric moisture like a sponge and creates those intense precipitation bands.
So a rapid pressure drop basically equals violence in the atmosphere.
Exactly. It creates a feedback loop of intensity. The more the pressure drops, the stronger the winds get, which pulls in more moisture, which makes the snow heavier. It is a self-sustaining engine of winter chaos.
Now, there is another concept I came across while looking at the data for the system that I found absolutely fascinating. It is called the 40-70 benchmark.
Ah, yes. The absolute holy grail for snow lovers on the East Coast. If you are a meteorologist working in this part of the country, those numbers are basically tattooed on the inside of your brain.
It sounds like a secret code. 40-70. Tell us about this aha moment in forecasting. What does it actually mean?
It really is a sweet spot for I-95 snow lovers. It refers to a very specific geographic coordinate on the map, 40 degrees north latitude, 70 degrees west longitude.
Okay. And for those of us who, you know, do not have a maritime chart sitting in front of us right now, where exactly is that?
It is out in the Atlantic Ocean, roughly about 80 miles due south of Nantucket. It is just open water.
Okay. So why does this one completely invisible point out in the middle of the ocean matter so much to millions of people on land?
Because the track at the center of the storm relative to that exact point determines everything for the big cities, D.C., Philly, New York, Boston. We basically look at three distinct scenarios regarding this benchmark. It is all about the geometry of the storm track.
Okay, let's walk through them. Scenario one, the storm tracks west of the benchmark, so inside the line, closer to land.
If it tracks west, closer to the coast, the counterclockwise rotation of the storm pulls in warmer air off the ocean. Remember, the ocean is a massive heat source compared to the frozen land right now.
Right.
So the storm brings that relatively warm maritime air inland. The rain-snow line pushes way north and west. This turns into a massive headache for places like Philly and New York. You get the messy scenario, slush, heavy rain, maybe some snow on the back end as it leaves, but definitely not the blockbuster snow event. It just washes away whatever snow you do manage to get initially.
Okay, nobody really wants the slushy mess. It's the worst of both worlds. So, scenario two, it tracks east of the benchmark, further out to sea.
That is what we call the fish storm. It stays way out in the ocean. The fishes get a lot of waves and turbulence, but the mainland just gets dry air pulled down from Canada. Maybe the Cape gets grazed by some flurries, but for the most part, it is a complete miss for the big cities. You get cold, windy weather, but virtually no snow.
And scenario three, it tracks directly over the benchmark.
That is the Goldilocks zone. If the low pressure tracks right over 4070, it is far enough offshore to keep the bitter cold air locked in place over the cities. But it's close enough to wrap that deep Atlantic moisture all the way back into the coast.
Oh, wow.
That is the recipe for a blockbuster snowstorm. It allows the cold air to constantly feed into the storm from the north and west without being corrupted by the warm ocean air.
And looking at the data for this weekend,
forecast models are showing this storm tracking very, very close to that 4070 benchmark. That is exactly why confidence is so incredibly high right now. That is why NOAA is using words like certainty in their discussions and issuing these blizzard warnings 24 hours out. The geometry of this specific storm is just perfect for big snow.
It is honestly fascinating how just 50 miles one way or the other out in the ocean completely changes millions of people's Monday morning commute.
It is the butterfly effect in real-time action. A slight wobble in the track changes an annoying rainstorm to 2 feet of paralyzing snow. But right now, the wobble looks like it is breaking entirely in favor of the snow. The models have been remarkably consistent run after run, which is honestly a bit scary in its own right.
Yeah, when the models all agree, you know you're in for it. So we know the science, we know the why, let's talk about the who. We need to do a regional breakdown because this impacts everyone across the coast very differently. Let's start with the absolute bullseye, New York City and Long Island.
The impact rating here is a solid 9 out of 10. Again, going back to that blizzard warning, the first since 2017. The context here is just vital. The city has not had to mobilize its resources for an event of this specific magnitude in a very long time. You have infrastructure that simply hasn't been tested like this in years.
And the disruption started even before the first flake fell. I mean, I am looking at flight cancellations as of Saturday night right now.
It is already ugly. 338 flights canceled at LaGuardia, 493 at JFK, 284 at Newark. And those numbers, they're only going to go up exponentially as the system actually arrives tomorrow. If you were planning to fly in or out of the NYC metro area on Sunday or Monday, you aren't going anywhere. You are entirely grounded.
And the city government is kicking into high gear. Mayor Zohran Mamdani held a press conference earlier today. He is clearly not taking any chances with this.
No, the municipal response is massive. They've mobilized 700 salt spreaders, 2,200 plows are ready to go. They're throwing literally everything they have at this storm. They cannot afford to let the economic engine of the city grind to a halt for a week.
But here's the detail from the press conference that I found really interesting. The snow army.
Yes. The emergency snow shovelers.
The city is actually hiring local residents to go out and shovel.
It is a great program, actually. It acknowledges the reality that the plows just can't do everything, especially in a city as incredibly dense as New York. You have all the pedestrian crossings, bus stops, subway entrances, fire hydrants.
Right. Plows just push the snow right onto the sidewalks anyway.
Exactly. So they pay residents. They literally call them emergency snow shovelers. to go out there and manually clear the critical infrastructure. It is essentially crowdsourcing the disaster cleanup. It mobilizes the community in a really effective way.
It is really smart. And hey, if you are stuck in the city tomorrow and you want to make some extra cash, look into it. So moving across the Hudson River, let's talk about New Jersey.
New Jersey is basically taking the absolute brunt of this system. Governor Mikey Sherrill has already declared a state of emergency for all 21 counties in the state. Not just the coast, not just the northern hills, the entire state. That alone tells you the immense breadth of this storm.
And 17 of those counties are currently under blizzard warning.
Correct. But there is a specific area in Jersey that meteorologists are calling the jackpot zone.
Oh boy. Where is that?
It's Monmouth, Ocean, and southeastern Burlington counties. The high-resolution models are repeatedly pinning the heaviest mesoscale banding right over this specific area. We are talking about totals easily nearing and very possibly exceeding 2 full feet of snow.
That is paralyzing amounts of snow. That is shut down the Garden State Parkway amounts of snow.
It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. But in New Jersey, particularly along the Jersey Shore and the Delaware Bay, it isn't just the snow we are worried about. It is the water. We have major concerns about coastal flooding.
Right, because of that extreme low pressure and those hurricane force winds actively driving the ocean water onshore.
Exactly. We're looking at moderate to major tidal flooding Sunday night into Monday's high tide cycles. So if you live in those coastal communities that are already prone to flooding, you have to deal with the rising ocean water and 2 feet of snow simultaneously.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It is a very dangerous combination. It makes emergency evacuation difficult, if not completely impossible, once the storm actually starts. You can't drive through floodwaters, and you certainly can't drive through floodwaters hiding under 2 feet of snow.
Oh, let's move further north, up into New England.
Now, New England is notoriously hardy when it comes to winter weather, obviously, but this storm is going to test even them. Connecticut, specifically looking at New London, is rated at a 9 out of 10 impact. They're looking at a solid 10 to 20 inches.
10 Boston.
Boston is right in that 10 to 20 inch range as well. But Cape Cod, the Cape, might actually see 1 to 2 feet.
Really? Even being out in the water?
Yeah, the geographical orientation of the Cape just catches those ocean effect snow bands perfectly as the storm pulls away to the north and east. Usually the Cape gets rain or a mix because it sticks out into the relatively warmer ocean. But the cold air injection with this specific bomb cyclone is so incredibly strong, it is going to be all snow. Even out there.
And Portsmouth, New Hampshire is also looking at a 9 out of 10 impact rating. So this thing isn't fizzling out as it goes north. If anything, its wind field is expanding.
It is a massive, broad shield of heavy precipitation. It isn't losing any real energy until it is well past Maine and up into the Canadian Maritimes.
Now, what about the southern end of this? The I-95 South Corridor, D.C., Philly, Baltimore.
This is where that rain-snow line we talked about earlier gets really tricky. Washington, D.C. is going to start as a rain and mix event. The cold air basically has to raise the incoming moisture. As the storm intensifies off the coast, it pulls that colder air down from the north, eventually changing the rain over to snow.
Mm.
So D.C. might only see up to 5 inches.
Well, 5 inches in D.C. shuts the city down just as effectively as 2 feet does in Boston.
Very true. The municipal infrastructure reacts very differently depending on what they're used to. Philadelphia, however, is a bit further north and stays colder longer. They are under a solid winter storm warning and could easily see up to 1 foot of snow.
And Baltimore.
Yeah.
Sitting right in the middle there.
Baltimore is sitting at an impact rating of about a 6 out of 10. Conditions will start to deteriorate rapidly Sunday afternoon. They are sort of the gateway to the really heavy stuff further north.
So we have firmly established that there is going to be a lot of snow.
Hmm.
But when we talk about meteorology matters, we really need to look beyond just the snowfall totals. The hazards here go way beyond just, you know, the snow is deep.
That is a crucial point for people to understand. If this were 2 feet of light, fluffy champagne powder like you get out in Utah or Colorado, it would be one thing. You could honestly just use a leaf blower to clear off your car. This is not that kind of snow.
No. We are dealing with the wind first.
Right. Winds gusting 40 to 55 miles per hour. When you combine that kind of wind with falling snow, you get instant whiteout conditions. But the real structural danger comes from the wet snow factor.
Explain that for us. Why is wet snow so much worse?
We in the weather community call it concrete. In January, when it is, say, 10 degrees outside, snow has a very low water content. It is light. It's airy. But this is late February. The ocean is a bit warmer. The air is slightly more humid. So the snow has a very high liquid water equivalent.
It's heavy.
It is incredibly heavy and sticky. The ratio of water to snow is much higher than your typical midwinter storm.
So it basically just sticks to everything it touches.
It plasters onto tree branches. It clings to power lines. Now do the basic physics of that. You take a large tree branch, you add 50 to 100 pounds of wet, sticky snow to it, and then you hit that loaded branch with a 55-mile-per-hour gust of wind.
Snap.
Snap. Branches come down everywhere, and they take the local power lines right down with them. We are looking at a very high probability of a widespread power outage event. Specific high-risk areas for outages are Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and eastern Massachusetts.
And that completely changes the survival equation, doesn't it? I mean, losing power in the summer is an annoyance, but losing power when it is 20 degrees outside is genuinely dangerous.
It really is. You lose your primary heat source. If you rely on electric pumps for well water, you suddenly lose your running water. It turns a fun, cozy snow day into a stressful survival situation very quickly. You have to start thinking about how you're going to stay warm without the electrical grid.
And what about travel during all this?
Dangerous, if not impossible. That is the exact official language coming from NOAA, specifically the National Weather Service offices.
Not language they use lately.
No, they don't. Whiteout conditions mean visibility is under a quarter mile. You won't be able to see the hood of your own car. But also, with winds that high, you get extreme drifting.
I saw mentions on the models of drifts reaching 3 to 5 feet in New England.
Yeah, a 5-foot drift is taller than most sedans. You can easily get stranded on a major highway simply because a snowdrift forms around your vehicle faster than you can drive through it. Staying off the roads is not just a polite suggestion from the authorities. It is an absolute necessity. Emergency crews might not be able to physically reach you if you get stuck.
You know, whenever a storm like this is officially announced, something fascinating happens at every local grocery store.
The shelves are cleared out. It is like clockwork.
It is the milk and bread phenomenon. I actually went to the store earlier today just to grab some coffee creamer, and it was like a scene from a zombie apocalypse movie. The bread aisle was completely bare. The dairy case was totally empty.
It happens every single time. It is practically a cultural ritual on the East Coast at this point.
Let's get into the psychology of this for a minute. Why do we do this? And specifically, why do we rush out for perishables?
It is one of the great recurring ironies of disaster prep. Think about it logically for just a second. You are preparing for a massive winter storm where the number one secondary risk is a widespread power outage.
Right, no electricity.
So what do people universally go out and buy? Milk, which completely spoils in about 4 hours if the fridge dies, and bread, which molds quickly or gets crushed. It completely delays utility, makes absolutely no practical sense.
Right. We actually looked into the research of Hirschhoffen for this. He's an expert in behavioral finance, and he explains this phenomenon really well. He says it is all about fear and something he calls excessive pessimism.
That is the psychological trigger right there. When we hear the word blizzard, our brains do not do a calm, calibrated risk assessment. We instantly jump to the absolute worst case scenario. We visualize ourselves starving in our homes. We visualize being physically trapped by the snow for weeks.
There's a siege mentality.
Exactly. And when we feel that deep primal fear, we immediately reach for comfort. We reach for nostalgia. We buy what we literally saw our parents buy when we were kids. We buy what we see everyone else in the store buying.
It's just massive peer pressure.
It is. If you walk into a store and see an empty shelf, your brain instinctively says, well, everyone else thinks milk is essential for survival, so I must desperately need milk too.
We saw the exact same thing in 2020 with the toilet paper shortages, and in 2021 with the gasoline panic buying.
Yes. It is an emotional purchase, not a practical one. The classic milk sandwich is just a psychological comfort mechanism.
It is. It is a way for us to feel like we are doing something, anything, to prepare, even if that something does not actually make an ounce of sense for a power outage. It restores our internal sense of control over an uncontrollable weather event.
Well said.
So let's provide a real survival guide for our listeners. If we absolutely should not be stocking up on milk and bread today, what should actually be in the grocery cart?
The anti-milk argument is incredibly strong. Again, it is totally unsafe to drink after 4 hours without power. You're basically just buying really expensive, soon-to-be spoiled milk.
I saw a recommendation in the research that I can fully get behind, honestly, the pro-candy and alcohol argument.
Yes, and this actually comes from a very practical, scientifically sound place.
Please explain the science of survival candy because I am all ears.
Candy is extremely high calorie. It provides a massive, quick energy boost. And most importantly, it is completely shelf stable. A candy bar does not care if the power goes out for 3 days. If you are out there shoveling heavy, wet concrete snow for 2 hours in freezing temps, a Snickers bar is actually an incredibly good fuel source for your body. It keeps your internal engine running when you are burning thousands of calories.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And the alcohol?
Well, obviously, it also does not need any refrigeration. But more importantly, it helps with what emergency planners call morale.
Morale is important.
It is. Being stuck in a freezing cold house with no internet, no TV, and kids bouncing off the walls is incredibly stressful. A glass of wine or a nice pour of bourbon can genuinely help with relaxation during a highly tense outage situation.
So it is about mental health just as much as physical health in a crisis.
Precisely. But for actual long-term sustenance, look at your pantry staples. Peanut butter is the ultimate survival food. It's nutrient-dense, high-fat, high-protein, and lasts forever at room temperature.
Dried fruit is good, too.
Dried fruit is excellent. Canned goods, specifically things you can safely eat cold right out of the can if you absolutely have to, like beans or certain soups.
Provided you actually own a manual can opener.
Yes. A manual can opener is the most forgotten prep item ever. Do not rely on your electric one.
So the takeaway is, swap the highly perishable milk and bread for peanut butter, whiskey, and chocolate.
Honestly, it sounds like a much better Blizzard party anyway.
It really does. It is all about comfort versus actual utility. But I guess in a way, if buying the gallon of milk makes you feel safer psychologically, maybe that serves a valid purpose too.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Just make sure you drink it really fast once the lights flicker.
Exactly. Before we wrap up, I want to circle back to the immediate situation outside. It is Saturday night. Sunday morning, things start to gradually go downhill. Sunday night is the absolute peak of this monster.
Right. If we can leave the listeners with one operational thought tonight, the window to prepare is rapidly closing. By Sunday afternoon, you should be exactly where you intend to stay for the next 48 hours.
Do not try to travel Sunday night under any circumstances.
Absolutely not. With snowfall rates of 2 to 3 inches an hour and pure whiteout conditions, emergency services might not be able to physically reach you if you slide off the road and get stuck. You are entirely on your own out there.
This is a classic intense nor'easter with those terrifying bomb cyclone characteristics. The pressure drop is historically significant. The moisture content is exceptionally high. The jackpot zone in Jersey could easily see 2 feet. And New York City is staring down its first real blizzard in 9 long years.
It is a major, potentially generational event for some of these areas. Treat it with the respect it deserves. The atmosphere is not something to mess with.
Okay, let's unpack this. Actually, no, we have unpacked it all. We have covered the complex science, the geography of the 40-70 benchmark, the deep psychology of panic buying, and the ultimate grocery list.
We covered a lot of ground today.
We really did. But I have one final thought for everyone listening right now. We sit here and talk about the 40-70 benchmark and bombogenesis and all these highly technical meteorological terms. But at the end of the day, weather is a profoundly human experience. It is that incredible eerie silence that falls over a massive bustling city when the snow gets deep enough to muffle all the cars. It is the raw, howling sound of the wind against your window.
It really connects us all. Everyone in the Northeast, millions of people, are going to be going through this exact same intense experience together for the next 48 hours. It is a shared reality in a world where we don't have many of those left.
It's true. It forces us to stop. So stay safe out there. Maybe check on your neighbors, especially the elderly who might need help shoveling. And honestly, just try to enjoy the excuse to slow down for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Let the modern world pause while this ancient atmospheric beast rolls through.
And enjoy your peanut butter and whiskey.
You've been listening to Meteorology Matters, created by meteorologist Rob Jones.
Thanks for listening. And remember, meteorology always matters.
Make sure to follow Rob Jones on Instagram at meteorologist, on TikTok at TV meteorologist, and on YouTube at Rob Jones Hurricane. Stay warm, everyone.